Well, welcome to the Duff and Quarters podcast brought to you by Tab Touch. Today, what's the deal with the Scott v King feud? What does Brad Scott's departure mean for North Melbourne? Some beauties in the mid-season draft and Marlon Pickett finally gets his chance. Frio's disappointing crowds explained and West Coast impressive once again.
That was out of bounds!
What's your name?
You're quite brilliant. Yeah, terrific.
Oh, that is... Oh, that's what it is.
The stadium holds its breath.
It's Duff and Quarters.
Brought to you by Tab Touch.
Well, hello, everybody. Welcome. It's Tuesday morning, which means it's time for the first edition this week of the Duff and Quarters podcast. I am Mark Duffield, the senior football writer of the West Australian, and with me in the studio have Glenn Quartermain, the sports editor of the Sunday Times. We are brought to you by Tab Touch.
Probably should be brought to you by 777 Pharmacy at the moment, Duff.
Yeah,
how are you feeling, mate?
We're the walking wounded. We're Quarters and I may both be put on the long-term injured list. Quarters is nursing a very sore neck. Quarters, swimming pools are for swimming into, not for diving into the side of.
Actually, I had a crooked neck and then I was putting the pool cover on and... I just took an awkward step, and you know when you fall and you're not expecting it, you go all over the shop and smashed into the side of the pool wall, give my neck a good whipping, and back to the physio yesterday to have needles stuck into my back.
And needles
stuck into my back. I'm feeling better already. So anyway, and you're feeling a bit better, Duff? You were.
Yeah, so the Lurgy's had two goes at me this winter already, and last week sat me on my backside for about 3 days, so... luckily got up for the game on Sunday, which was fantastic. And just day by day, getting a little bit better and a little bit better. I'm not running any marathons anytime soon, Quarters.
I might do a couple of those later in the year, but that's for another day. Speaking of being put on your backside, David King nearly got put on his backside at the weekend, and I did not like it. I'll preface it by saying I've got a huge respect for Brad Scott as a footy coach, and I have absolutely no doubt he'll be coaching in the AFL next year. I didn't like the stuff with David King. I didn't like him feigning to give him a hip and shoulder and then not going through with it. Obviously, you don't have to be a lip reader to see what he said to him as he was running past. And then the stuff post-match, I just thought it was really unnecessary and he let himself down. And I think the AFL has to issue a please explain over that. If nothing else, from my angle, King wasn't even expecting it. So if had he cannoned into him or... King had a shift in his position, we could have had a bit of a problem there, Duff.
Yeah, it would have been ugly if there'd been contact and if King had reacted. At the end of the day, David King is a media analyst.
Exactly.
And at that point in time, at three-quarter time in the North Melbourne Western Bulldogs game at the weekend, he was performing his role as the boundary side commentator.
Yep. Paid to have an opinion, mate.
He's standing where he's allowed to stand, and there should be no contact, unsolicited, between either players or coaches or staff and media people. And we had an incident like that over here last year at the airport with Nick Natanui and a West Coast staffer, and we know how ugly that got and what that led to. So, yeah, just understand that media people are there, they're doing their job. You won't always agree with them and you may feel wronged by them, but there are different recourses than pretending to drop your shoulder.
There's got to be a history there. I know it was an emotional day and Brad Scott did a good job to get his boys up. The story is they were pretty emotional before the game.
Yeah.
But there's got to be a history there, you know? I mean, seriously, you've got to be able to ride those comments as an AFL coach.
So let's try and make sense of the Brad Scott scenario, because this is the story of the weekend and this is the biggest story of the season so far. They weren't having a great season, but they finished ninth last year. I thought they traded in badly. I think in the past, North Melbourne's traded quite creatively, given they're not a sexy footy club, so they tend not to get the big fish.
Yeah.
But I thought they did well under Brad Scott to get Jared Waite, to get Sean Higgins.
Higgins has been as good as anyone, I reckon. As good a trade as anyone.
So they've been fantastic pieces of list management by North. I don't know that Polak Who's Captain Risky? What's his...
Let's just call him Captain Risky. I actually like Polak. I think he'd be okay.
So Polak's going to be okay. Aaron Hall is, as I described him in my column on
he's
Monday,
the one.
One trip to the well too many.
Yeah, I reckon he's the one.
Yep. And Jasper Pittard was the
Jasper
one.
Jasper Pittard,
name,
Captain
name,
Risky.
His name escaped me. I just, whenever I look at him, I just think Captain Risky.
Yeah.
So maybe not so good with their list management this year. I get the feeling that North, after finishing ninth last year, started to misunderstand where they were at. Clearly, that's been brought home to them this year, that they're not where they thought they might be. And clearly, that meant there was going to have to be a major list reboot. And clearly, Brad Scott did not feel that he had the energy
to do a third, probably, or even a fourth.
To do that again. So he and the club have been in talks. My question to you, Quarters, as a person who's been covering this, I suspect you're the one person around that's been covering it longer than me. Is this the right way to do it, or should they have just made sure this did not get out? And
well, it got out.
Brad Scott, how does it get out?
Well, Robbo first wrote about it on Friday. Well, it got out because it was leaked. So someone at the club is not happy with the situation.
Yeah.
I think he's been white-handed, clearly.
Yep.
So that's been leaked. Good on you, Robbo. Great story. And I think Brad Scott even admitted that on 360 last night.
Yep.
But I think I don't like it. I don't like mid. It's strange because normally you get a caretaker with three or four rounds to go. This is more than half a season to go. It's a really strange timing.
Mm.
Big raps on Reece Shaw to be the caretaker, but I don't like it. And I'll just say I have no reason to disbelieve Brad Scott when he says I haven't spoken to any other AFL clubs, but it's not going to do him any harm because he's now on the market and I think he'll be coaching a club next year.
I've got no doubt he'll be coaching a club.
So he's on the market, Duff. I'm saying you don't have to speak to a club to be on the market. He is now on the market. It's not going to hurt him. Look, I think he's done a very good job with North. I think he'll do a good job with wherever he goes. But let's not muck around. And, it was a good exit at the weekend, but I'm not sure what it does for North's season.
No, I don't like the fact that North Melbourne has, they've got 12 games, 13 weeks to go. That's 3 months. That is a long time to wallow in misery if the caretaker doesn't work out well for you. And there's a lot of reasons why the caretaker might not work out well. I mean, one, there's the fact that Reece Shaw is not a proven coach. But even if he's going to be a good coach, does he gel with the players? The players were clearly still invested in Brad Scott. You don't get a performance like you got at the weekend unless the players are still invested.
Ask the obvious question? Well, where were those performances in the ensuing weeks?
Yeah, no, it's a good question. And it's the age-old footy question.
So you turn up and you're emotional.
Yeah.
Would have helped a few weeks ago.
Yeah, no, very good point. Very good point.
Now, joyous day yesterday or night last night with the mid-season draft. Now, whether you agree with it or disagree with it, that's another point. But right now, what a great story. DeLuca to Carlton, Mayo to St Kilda, great headline name. Dylan O'Reilly, Freo got their man finally. Missed out father son by 2 games. They got him. But the best of all, Marlon Pickett to Richmond. Did the finger at the weekend. There were doubts whether he was going to get picked up. It's a curious pickup, but I'm wrapped for him and good on you, Richmond.
I'm wrapped for him. And you know what I like most about this is that with Marlon Pickett's situation with the finger, and we're told it could be an 8-week injury, which will take you through to about a month, maybe 5 or 6 weeks left in the home and away season. I get the feeling that Richmond's saying, let's get him over, let's get him training, and provided he does the right thing, let's re-sign him.
Absolutely.
And let's go again
in
2020.
Why are you going for a 27-year-old otherwise?
Yeah.
It's a curious... I was actually, being a Hawthorn supporter, I was actually hoping we'd pick him up because I really rate him, but he just doesn't fit our list profile. We don't need 27-year-olds in that bracket. I would have thought a club such as Gold Coast Duff might have had a bit of a nibble at him.
Well, Gold Coast were very keen before the national draft last year, and then they got cold feet. And clearly, Marlon's about 7 years ago spent time in jail, and that looked like it was going to be the end of any football aspirations he had. He got out of jail, he got himself right off the field, and then gradually his His on-field has been building and building and building to the point where in 2018, he had the sort of year playing midfield for Fremantle, for South Fremantle, that Tim Kelly had in 2017 playing midfield for South Fremantle. So there was a feeling he would be taken. I reckon this guy is the Rolls-Royce of second-tier footy in Australia. I think he's the best talent in the second tier anywhere in the country. And that's just not factoring in age or anything like that. Just looking at a player and going, he can run, he can jump, he can find the ball, he can use the ball, he's brave, he's got a little bit of mongrel in him, and he's a super athlete. So I think there's no reason why he shouldn't translate to the AFL.
Do you think there's a bit of Richmond with the Sydney Stack, let's call it an experiment, that turned beautifully for them? They've got the structure there to get these picks right. And would that have played into it a bit?
I reckon that Sydney Stack would have encouraged them. But the other thing I reckon about this is that I think what they're thinking is, what have we got to lose?
Absolutely.
$70,000. That's what you got to lose. And if you're a club as big as Richmond that's pushing the 100,000 member mark, the chances are you've got $70,000 to spend and basically, you know, just accept that if it doesn't work out, that's what it's cost you. But and it's over to Marlon now because, you know, this here is your opportunity, the opportunity we thought you'd get at the end of last year. Here it is. When Sydney Stack had this opportunity put in front of him after missing the draft, he took it with both hands and has become, you know, a cult figure.
I think that'll help Marlon. And also, I think given the disappointment he's had over the last few years, being a possibility to be drafted and then not, and the footy he's played, I'd be astonished if he doesn't go over there and give it absolutely his best crack. And I'd love to see him playing footy next year. This year's a bit of an ask, but you never know.
Well, you know how it may play out for him this year is that clearly one thing they have to learn the club systems.
Yeah.
They have to get indoctrinated into the whole system of being an AFL player, what the training requirements are, et cetera, et cetera. He's got 6 or 7 weeks to do that quarters before he has to worry about how well he's playing.
Mm.
You know, he can work out, okay, Richmond will say to him, well, we think you can play, you know, in our midfield, or we think you can play off halfback. They'll be the two places they'll have in mind for him. And so they'll say, this is how we defend, or this is how we work the midfield. And he can sit there and he can be part of match simulations and all that sort of stuff, as long as he doesn't have to handle the ball too much for a couple of weeks. He can get indoctrinated into all of that and then come round 16 or 17, you know, he trots out and he plays for their VFL team. And if he puts in a couple of good ones and there's a couple of injuries,
away you go.
And you've got a 27-year-old who is a very, very, very good player who might just slide into your team and might just play finals for you this year. He's not the only good story either, Quarters. Josh DeLuca, I think, is a fantastic story.
He is.
So he's a guy who was on Fremantle's list for several years.
About four or five games.
Played four games. Now, Fremantle loved everything about this kid except for one thing. He's not a great kick. And they already had a lot of blokes who weren't great kicks.
Still do.
Mm-hmm. And sometimes you're just one too many of that particular type. I think he's a good chance to have an impact because what we're noticing about Josh's kicking efficiency this year at Subiaco is it's gone up a bit. So clearly this is something he's worked on. Now, he's never going to be Sam Mitchell, you know, like silky off both sides. But if he can get his kicking to a stage where it's competent, like a Matty DeBoer's been able to do, there's no reason why this guy can't have AFL impact. And Carlton needs mature bodies, don't they? They need 23, 24-year-old bodies who'll save their kids from being so banged up.
It's the one area of their list, exactly.
So that's a great story. You mentioned Dylan O'Reilly. Son of Stephen. So does that mean he gets called Sauce? Actually, he's...
Sore.
Well, Stephen's nickname is Otis. So maybe he'll be Sotus.
Or Milo. Bit of an obscure one for the listeners out there. The other one was Cam Sutcliffe being picked up by Port. He's been on their list. Obviously spent a fair bit of time at Freo. Interesting one. Mature body, who knows the system. He's been at Port, played under the coaches. So it's a, you know, for them, I don't think there's any loss there. If they need him, he can step up.
Yeah, good person, role player. So they'll look at him and they'll think, well, if we need a mature halfback flanker to step into the team, then we know this guy played for several years in one of the best defences in the AFL. So that's what they're about. Of course, Kyle Dunkley, the brother of Josh,
yes,
and the son of Andrew. So that's a great story. And they had the Fox cameras in the Dunkley household when...
Andrew's a man of few words.
Yeah.
You're allowed to get excited, Andrew.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I interviewed Andrew in the rooms after the Doggies had won the 2016 flag, and obviously Josh was in that team. He was about that excited then, I have to say.
Maybe he just doesn't get excited,
I think he's not the most excitable bloke.
Just a couple of things we should cover very quickly before we get into the games. Really concerning interview with Paddy McCartan over concussion. Describing himself as a shell of the person that he was, finds it hard to do basic things now. Good luck to him going forward, but that was really concerning.
So the first thing the whole world has to say to Paddy is just... the footy will be there for you at some level when you get the rest of this right. So, and when I say at some level, it may be that Paddy McCartan isn't going to play much AFL footy. But if Paddy McCartan can get himself medically cleared and up and going again as a person, he'll play football. He'll play good football at some level.
Yep.
And it might be VFL. He might come over here and play on the waffle.
But footy's not really the be-all and end-all.
No, exactly.
It's getting yourself right, living a life. And the other one was, I think the flag's finally up at Cadinia Park, Duff. I think they've accepted. Well, let's hope they have. Little Gaz, going to miss this week.
So the mail last night is that they wouldn't be challenging the striking charge.
Good call.
Charge.
You know what? I reckon it's as much as it wouldn't look good.
Well,
you know, I mean, and they're all they're very different situations, but you know, you've got away with it twice. I just don't think it looks good for them as a brand. Just move on.
Do you reckon every now and again the AFL, which officially does not interfere in any way, shape, or form in its judicial process?
Oh, well, I thought there might have been a bit of a tap on the shoulder. Yeah,
you reckon they might have rung up and said,
"Hey, boys,
are you thinking about challenging this one?" We wouldn't be challenging this one. That had to happen. And you know what? There wouldn't have been any... this was a marginal offence if the tribunal had just done its job 2 weeks ago.
Yeah.
And suspended him for a week. Just upheld what Michael Christian put in place. Suspended him for a week for the lifted forearm that donged Dylan Shiel in the side of the head. Then I suspect... we would have all moved on from this.
Still a little short jab to their face, though, you know, and to the chin. And unlike Gaz, last month or so.
But think of what the Shiel thing triggered.
Yeah.
The entire football public knew that they'd applied a different rule for Gary Ablett.
Yeah.
That means everyone on the field he's playing against knows they've applied a different rule for Gary Ablett, which means they're getting into him, which means he's getting niggled and he's getting irritated.
But he's been niggled and irritated his entire career.
Not like...
you reckon new level.
So. I reckon he's getting booed by the crowd every week. The booing went to another level.
Yeah. Which we predicted a couple of weeks ago.
Absolutely. And it just got to him a little bit. And so, you know, there's a bit of a tete-a-tete between him and Anthony Miles, and he throws one.
Now, have a week off, Gaz. Indigenous round, Duff. It's over two rounds, isn't it? Last round and this round.
Well, it's almost over three.
Yeah,
I think there's a couple of... so basically every club gets to stage a home Indigenous game and wear their Indigenous jumper at home. So that's, as I understand. So I have a feeling there's still...
there's this weekend as well.
And there's a couple of games this weekend. Because obviously West Coast had theirs...
the week one.
Against Melbourne, yeah.
But they wanted to wear it last week, I understand, but there was a clash.
Yep.
Clash of jumper, which I couldn't see the clash, but that's why they didn't wear it. If anyone's wondering why they didn't wear it last weekend, that is why. What I loved about it was the little subplots from Indigenous players over the weekend, but none better than here. Amazing last quarter. Brisbane lost nothing in my regard. Last quarter full of drama, and Freo just lacked that killer punch and found a way. And it was Sonny Walters. And when the ball was in his hands with 23 seconds to go,
yep,
I knew that this is game over. I would not want that ball to be in anyone else's hands.
No, that's absolutely right. Only one other person's hands, David Munday.
Yeah, Melville, as he's proven.
And I think every Fremantle player spoken to after the game, they said, oh, you know, what did you think when it was in Michael Wallace's hand? And they all said, well, it was either him or Barra. So they're the two whose hands you'd want it in. Maybe Nathan Wilson, maybe Luke Ryan.
Yeah, Nathan Wilson was terrific. Ryan, I loved his game, given what he overcame early with Cameron's first quarter, 3 goals. I loved Hill's game. Bradley Hill was terrific. Efficiency was up, just worked his little heart out.
That was as close. Brad Hill in his first season at Fremantle played some exceptional football and won the club best and fairest. I reckon that game on the weekend is pretty close to the best game of football.
He's played at Freo?
That Brad Hill's played at
Freo.
Yeah,
I think so. A few others worth mentioning too. Chera went forward, kicked 2 goals. I think I love Lobb's final quarter.
Yep.
Concerns over Jesse Hogan. You know, didn't have a kick, but I guess in a way played his role late. We saw Ross Lyon demand something of him at three-quarter time. Didn't have a starring role, but at least gave some effort out there in the final quarter. Got on the chain that was important at the end. So a lot of players played their roles, and I haven't even mentioned Mundy and Fife yet. You know, nothing lost by Brisbane. I picked Freo. It was a pick I was worried about.
It was a 50-50 pick, and it turned into a 50-50
game. By the way, Harris Andrews, what a star.
All Australian power defender. Like, there'll be three or four names thrown up in Melbourne, but this guy is a gun. He's the next Jeremy McGovern.
Yep, if he's not already.
He doesn't just spoil, he takes marks. His positioning was fantastic. He gave Jesse a bit of a lesson, really, on how to position yourself when the ball's coming forward. And I kind of thought Jesse got to a point where he knew he couldn't beat him in a one-on-one, and he was trying to find ways where he could get away from him and get the ball on his own. And Harris's positioning was so good that Harris ended up being in the spot where the ball was going to go. And Jesse, because he was trying to get away from him, was ending up in the spot where the ball was never going to get to.
It's not functioning that well, that forward line, though.
No, it's not.
The one real concern out of that game was the crowd, Duff. I thought perfect conditions, nothing else. It's not clashing with anything. Lockie Neal returning. Every chance to win the game. I'm worried about the crowd.
Freo's crowds against the non-football state teams tend to be a bit off. And the other thing is they've got this new time slot, which is later on a Sunday. So instead of 2:40 on a Sunday, they're going to 3:20 on a Sunday. I'm not sure how well that's going to work out for them. Because what it means is that if you've got young kids and they've got to go to school the next day,
it's just that little bit later.
By the time you get home, it's about 8 o'clock. Yeah. Then you're looking at dinner. And then, you know, by the time they get to bed, it's 10 o'clock. And if they're all hyped up because Michael Walters has kicked one after the siren,
as they would be,
then you don't get them to sleep and they don't get a good night's sleep. There'd be all those things that people would be factoring in when they decide whether they're going to.
So they'll be looking hard at going back to a 2:40 next year, do you think?
Well, I think 2:40 suits better. I think the ideal time slot really for Optus Stadium is the Saturday night time slot, because the light show is just so fantastic. And that, you know what, it might be that played into it, because it's such a good product, to use a wanky American term, to have the lights kick in late and they've got the purple roof, and or if West Coast plays, the blue and gold roof. All that stuff's just great as a product, but at the end of the day, make it easy for families to get to, and that's where you get your big numbers from.
By the way, before we get into the other Sunday game, Saturday night, we saw a pretty good game too. Adelaide v West Coast. 8 from 10 now at Adelaide Oval, the Eagles.
Yeah, they love the ground. You know, the other thing about West Coast is that West Coast just have the class to lift.
Which they did again.
And get it done. Mm. And it's the same guys that do it. You know, even when they find a way to get around Jeremy McGovern early in games, when it comes to late in games and they get tired, they end up kicking down the line to Jeremy McGovern. He ends up taking marks. Luke Shuey gets hold of them around the centre.
Last quarter was terrific.
Elliot Yeo flexes his big body and his muscle.
And in the first half when they needed him.
Yep. And then the forwards come to play. You know, Josh Kennedy might only get 2 or 3 or 4 looks at it, but you can guarantee
3 goals at the weekend.
Yep.
Yeah, Jack Darling, 3 goals at the weekend.
Exactly.
Cripps, 3 goals at the weekend.
I thought Cripps was that was probably Jamie's best game for the season, and he's starting to find that form that he was in last year. And I just get the feeling that of all the teams at the top end, West Coast are going to be the ones that are coming for Geelong at the end of the season.
Or Collingwood. And I thought 33 points down was significant too. 100 tackles was significant too. So there's good signs there, and we say it every week, but just the efficiency. It gets them home every week. And
absolutely.
When the rest of it comes together, I agree with you. It's going to be, there'll be some sort of a showdown later in the year.
Yep. What did you make of the Crows out of all of that?
I've concerns about Taylor Walker. It was a good job by Schofield, by the way, but I think his ability to, the good's good, but there's too much of a gulf between his worst and his best, and we don't see any consistency. I think we're looking at a team that's no better than eighth. And I thought 3 or 4 weeks ago they were really coming with a run, but I just reckon now they're back in the pack a bit. I think, you know, I expect them to be in about where, about that eighth to 10th, 11th is. They've got some, too few doing too much is probably the best way of putting that. Sloan, I think it was a good game by Malera, particularly early, but too few doing too much would be the way I'd describe it.
So if you're Don Pike, is Taylor Walker's spot in the team under threat?
No. I don't think at the moment they can afford to. I'd be looking at Josh Jenkins back in there. Himmelberg's been great for them. He's been a great find, but I think he's had a run of about a month now. It's probably time for Josh Jenkins to come back in, I think. Look, I have real concerns about their forward entries and too few doing too, not enough.
Yeah, they did get hold of them around the centre stoppages early. That was interesting. But it's also interesting that West Coast have that gear to go to, don't they? When the game goes on the line, Chewy gets rolling, Redden gets rolling, Yeo gets rolling, and then suddenly the Eagles become a very formidable engine room again.
Good player, Ellis Yeoman, too. I've been a fan of his for a while. He's a good player.
Yeah, big, strong body.
Oh, isn't he?
There's always
and by
room.
The way, good. Well done, Andrew Gaff.
Yep.
That was a lot of courage in that pocket. He's done it before at that venue, too. That, you know, running with a flight into Ellis Yeoman, who's a big body. So
yeah, Andrew Gaff's not a collision player, but he's not a player who won't go when he has
when
to
it's
go.
His turn, yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Okay, let's talk about some of the other results.
St Kilda, 13-point winners over Carlton at Marvel Stadium. Did what they had to when they had to. It was a funny old game. Another sort of nice cameo from Parker too, who's really building into something this year.
He's such a good athlete. He's erratic, and he'll go missing out of games for long periods of time, but because he's fast and he's strong, he's able to apply pressure, which is what they want from that medium-sized forward now. They want real tackle pressure. They want real hunt when the opposition defenders have got the ball, and he certainly gives them that. What does the result mean?
For Carlton?
For Brendan Bolton. Does
it's dire still. I mean, that was a winnable game. They need a couple. I mean, I just don't think he's coaching next year, regardless. I think it's well done for Carlton with sticking with him. You've developed a list, but I think I'm not sure if he can take them any further from what I've seen. These are games they need to win. They didn't. And you can't, it's again, you got within 13 points, you know, so what?
And they continue to have their forward line structure ahead of the ball messed up, where the little fella, Goddard, keeps on being the one that's out the front, the deepest target in attack, and they end up with Harry Mackay sucked up too far up the ground.
We saw an example at the weekend of poor old Cripps, who's at it again at the weekend, another terrific game. He gets the ball clear in the centre, and he looks forward,
and there's
no one there, and he actually lost the footy because he was sort of second-guessing himself. And that comes down to coaching. And I know it's youth. There is a lot of youth there too. But you've got to get those structures right and let the players stick to the structures so that at least the midfielders coming in know where to go or at least to create some opportunities.
So one of their experienced forwards brought into the team this year was Mitch McGovern. Are they getting
pressures
out of Mitch
massive?
McGovern?
No, they're not. But listen, you paid good money. You need to take some clunks and you need to kick some goals. You're experienced. You need to bring the younger players forward with you. And I just don't think he's doing enough. Simple as that.
Let's go all the way back to Friday night. A very good win by Collingwood in the end, managed to stave off a pretty dogged sort of a Sydney team.
Rampy.
I
was watching that game, and we get to that Chris Mayne missing his set shot, and I'm thinking something's going to happen here. And of course, he ran at least 5 metres, 6 metres over that mark. What is going on with Rampy late in games? He's a good player. I like him.
He's better than a good player. Yeah. He's a great player.
And has been over a long period of time, but he's just having one of those months where it's just imploding. Maybe it mirrors Sydney season. Maybe it's been a really frustrating season for him.
Yep.
And that's how it's manifesting itself in these actions. Maybe that's the answer.
And clearly he hasn't studied Chris Mayne's recent record from set shots, because really, you don't have to do a lot to get Chris Mayne to miss a set shot from about 35 metres. That's almost, when that ball was in Chris Mayne's hands near the end of the game, I'm thinking, well, he's no better than 50-50.
The two other interesting things, Sam Reid, 6 goals, great effort.
When you see Sam Reid play like that, Quarters.
Yeah, well, we won't for another month or so.
That's the thing. Like, no. Do you just wonder, why don't we see more of that?
Yes, I do. It could have something to do with the bud down there, but he's been out for a month. But prior to last week, when he comes back in, he kicks 6. So it's bewildering. Hewitt went to Pendlebury. No shame in that. He's a great player. But again, side bottom allowed to run loose. It was a really strange one.
Anyway. Okay. Down in Launceston, your boys, the Hawkers, get up over the Port Adelaide boys. Now,
poor crowd, that one. Again.
Yeah, it's not a good thing when you see that stadium half full.
No.
Down there, is it? It's a tiny stadium anyway. Probably 15,000-16,000 will pretty much top it up. And when you see empty seats in those grandstands down there, you sort of think, well, Tasmania, if you want your own team,
yeah, show up.
You really need to be turning up to those games there, and the games at Belrive down at Hobart as well.
A couple of the interesting things in that game, well, obviously Gunston was the difference with 6 goals. It was a 31-point win. That game was pretty well over at quarter time, in my opinion. Rosie tried to lift, but he had Ben Stratton on him, which was a really good learning curve for him, I thought. It was a great plaudit for Rosie, for the captain of the opposing team to go onto him. But Ricky Henderson has been a really interesting one at the Hawks. He's been a slow build, Duff, because last year you watched him and he just built and built and built, and he would be ahead, in my opinion, in Hawthorn's best and fairest right now.
You know what I love about Clarko? And this, I reckon, has applied for years and years and years, and I reckon it's why they were able to win 4 flags, not 1, 2 or 3, is that at the end of the day, Alistair Clarkson knows the name of the game is football, and you have to be able to kick.
And he can kick, yeah. And he sticks with them too. He doesn't. They have their good games. They have their poor game. He sticks with them. They become webbed into that structure.
Yep.
And look at him now. He's integral.
Yep.
He is integral to that team.
So when a guy who's as good a kick as Ricky Henderson is, and he's always been a great kick, when he's finding the ball as often as he's finding it, and it was 37 on the weekend. Yeah.
He's been 30-plus most weeks this year.
So something good's going to come of that, isn't it?
Mm.
You know, and it's interesting. I see other teams have these great ball users, you know, and they're in the coal face and they're trying to win the ball, and everyone's talking about taking your turn and being honourable and all that sort of stuff. All that stuff's great. But where you can, get your ball users on the outside, running, carrying, and using the ball, and let your bulldozers get inside and fossick around and get it out to them. And if that means they end up handballing all day to your best kicks, then that's a win for your team. I think Clarkson organises his team better than anybody.
Oh, he does.
That way. And that's maybe why, at the end of the day, that may be why he's the best coach in the AFL.
No doubt. GWS Melbourne, what do you think of that?
I didn't like either team.
Yeah, well, yeah, I think GWS should have been further in front at halftime. Melbourne were horrible. Let's start with that. GWS at least got a win at the MCG. But that was a shocking final quarter. And great sides that win premierships keep their foot on the accelerator. So in the end, it was a 26-point win to GWS. That should have been a 50-60-point win, the way Melbourne performed. And they didn't. So I just think GWS, top four, yep. You need to be better than that to win a flag, and you need to keep your foot on the accelerator.
I reckon all the great premiership dynasties have had one of those games or one of those seasons where there was just so bereft of excuses. They all had to sit down, look in the mirror, and be brutally honest about where they were at as players and what they were likely to achieve if they didn't change. I think it happened to Geelong in 2006. I think it happened to Hawthorn at the end of the premiership hangover year in 2009, maybe even halfway through 2010, when they weren't going that flash. It definitely happened to Brisbane in 2000 in a game against Carlton where they got absolutely walloped by about 12 goals at Princess Park. And then about a week or two later, they played the Predator game against Essendon, where Lee Matthews came out with the, "If it bleeds, you can kill it," and we think Essendon bleeds. And I think those sort of games where you hit your low point and everyone sits down and goes, you know what, unless we actually do something different, we're not going to get to where we need to go. I don't think GWS, there's so much talent at GWS, I don't think they've ever had that point.
Mm-hmm.
They've always felt it was just a matter of going out and trying harder next week and everything would be all right. And I think there's still blokes running around there that they flirt with their form.
So I reckon they've been like that for 3 years, Duff. And they've made two prelims.
Yep.
I think they've almost been a premiership team and they're still almost a premiership team. And that's with three forwards who can interchange kicking five or six.
Yep.
I just think they're almost there. They're not there yet.
I agree. And
they could turn it around in the second half, by the way, because they've clearly got the talent.
But something needs to change.
Is it the coaching structure? Is it the coach?
Well, the coach has to be able to impress upon his players. You're not there yet. You're not there yet. So I hated that game because I hated Melbourne's first three quarters and I hated GWS's last quarter. And I'm exactly the same as you.
Conceded seven goals in the last quarter.
Yeah.
Against a team that was shot to bits.
Horrible.
So it's, here you go, Melbourne, have a couple of, you know, free hits here.
Yeah.
Because we've had enough. We've won this.
I just, I looked at that and I thought, well, the penny still hasn't dropped for your GWS. And as for Melbourne, they made some ground against West Coast the previous week on the Friday night here in Perth. And then for them to turn up and play like that was just, I think, quite demoralising.
So 30 entries for three goals in the first three quarters, Duff. It tells you a bit about how that forward line's functioning too.
Well, it also tells you a bit about how the midfield's functioning.
Yeah, well, De Boer got Oliver and Viney a bit later. Did another good job. But, yeah, look, real problems there. They are, the cavalry's arriving in some form, but I think it's just way too late for Melbourne this year. The best thing they can do is reload, have a good second half of the year and use it for momentum going to the next to the postseason and the preseason. And look, enter next year as the team to, you know, one of the teams to beat. They can still get something out of it. I'm just not sure where they're at the moment. Geelong, 27-point winners in really good game over Gold Coast. Chris Scott's 200th game. Should be congratulated. Fantastic record. He's got him in prime position. Are they going to win the flag? It's funny, you know, I'm still not convinced, but they couldn't be in a better position right now.
Yeah, no, I agree. I think they're certainly in the mix. I like the way they play.
Geez, Mitch Duncan likes kicking goals too, doesn't he?
He's a very good ball user.
Yeah.
Mitch Duncan. Gold Coast, clearly Stuart Dew's doing a great job. He can get them into games. He can get them to compete in games. It's just that at the end of games, that extra experience, the older, harder bodies and the extra class does them in. But
this time of previous years, at this stage, they started to really fall away badly. They haven't.
Yep.
It's credit to him. He'd be one of the coaches of the year.
Absolutely. He's done a fantastic job. And they lost nothing, in my eyes, on the weekend in the way they played against the
Richmond Cats. Just rolled up 80,000 Dreamtime at the G. I love that spectacle. It's great. And in the end, they allowed Essendon a little bit of leeway in the final term too. There was a little bit of GWS about them, but I wouldn't be too concerned. I'm not sure how bad Lynch's calf is. That's the only thing.
And cork.
Okay, it's just a cork. Okay.
Yep.
And a couple of significant ones for Essendon. Stringer and Shield, both hamstrings. It's starting to look like a season that's getting away from Essendon.
So what does that mean for John Worsfold quickly?
Tenuous. I think there's going to be a few coaching changes. He could be one of them.
Yeah, it's an interesting one, isn't it? I heard that they were getting very restless there before the Fremantle-Essendon game, and I heard that if that result had gone the other way, there might have been some serious pressure on Woosha at that point. And certainly the way they played for three quarters on the weekend won't do anything to alleviate that.
2:10 to three-quarter time they were.
So, yeah, that's not
great. That's not elite.
And the difference between Richmond and GWS, you mentioned Richmond had a fade out as well. Richmond's been to the mountain. So we know that the qualities that get you there.
I don't think they'd be too somewhere. Concerned about that final quarter.
When you're in GWS's shoes and you haven't been there yet, you've got to make sure that all the pieces are in place.
Yeah.
Thank you very much for joining us today. We were brought to you by Tab Touch. We'll be back on Thursday to run you through round 11 in the AFL. There will be a trip to China this week. Quarters?
There will be.
Fan? Not a fan?
I'm a fan. I might write about that this week.
Yeah.
I am. I think it's when you've got 1.4 billion people sitting on your doorstep, you'd be remiss if you're not to try and tap into that market.
You know what? I just can't bring myself to care about it yet.
Yeah. So need to care.
I hear the logic of what you're saying.
You need to care.
But I can't bring
just
myself
care a
to
little
care
bit. Just you need to care just a little bit.
Okay. You've got
tap into that one, mate. And there's a it's flourishing. I can tell you. 1.4 billion.
I'll get the world's smallest violin out and I'll start playing it.
Please do.
We'll be back on Thursday. Please join us then and we'll talk about round 11.
This has been the Duff and Quarters podcast brought to you by Tab Touch.